Welcome to The Good Life with Dr. Danny, a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries and Formation Institute, divisions of Jesus Christ is calling you. To contact Dr. Danny and learn more about the ministry, visit drdanny.live. Now let's join Dr. Danny and experience the good life today.
Danny Yamashiro here, encouraging you with inspirational stories to share with family and friends. Welcome to The Good Life. How does God take a man who perfected moves on the gritty Division I college wrestling mat to skillfully position himself in the realm of artificial intelligence, monetizing a startup, and creating a scholarship for high school athletes, all at the age of 24, while being an officer in the Army? This is the story of Ryan Hattrick. As in Psalm 78, 72, Ryan is leading others with skillful hands. We pause here at the beginning of our show, as we typically do, to remind you the reason we have the Good Life program is to share the love of Jesus Christ with you, dear friend, that Jesus Christ makes a difference in the lives of people. I'm talking about the love of Jesus, so strong that he died on the cross for your sins and mine. He was buried, yes, and rose again on the third day, offering God's hope. God's hope that Ryan Hattrick has responded to, Ryan living his life for the Lord. Ryan Hattrick is a graduate student at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the Technology and Public Policy Program. His work is in the artificial intelligence policy space, and he's researching how the United States can continue to innovate and lead in the field of AI while doing it in an ethical way. Ryan graduated from West Point in May of 2021. He's currently a second lieutenant in the Army in the cyber branch. At West Point, Ryan wrestled all 4 years and was captain of the wrestling team his senior year. He's from Bemis Point, New York, just south of Buffalo. Ryan, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for that intro. Appreciate that.
Where is Bemis Point, New York?
Bemis Point's about an hour south of Buffalo. Bills Mafia there is very strong. We love our Buffalo Bills. And that was my home. It was kind of like a rural town, a lake town. And it's just right in between Pittsburgh and Buffalo, kind of in the middle there in the southwest corner of New York State. So there's not a lot of action going there a lot, which I like kind of growing up. It was nice to be there in Bemis. I really enjoyed my hometown. I love my hometown. You know, it's right in Chautauqua County, and the people there are really incredible, and, you know, they kind of, like, formed me into who I am today, and now I'm off here in Boston, and it's, like, a lot of, like, you know, faster-moving pace and stuff. So sometimes I do like going home to that, and it's pretty nice.
Who would you say, Ryan, influenced you most in your earlier years?
Definitely my mom and my dad. So my dad always just told me to be like the best version of myself every day, and to inspire others to be the best versions of themselves. He always told me that, like, you know, when you get a goal in your head, you got to go chase it and to do everything you can to achieve it. And at that point in time in my life, it was wrestling and running. Those are like my two big goals that I wanted to achieve in those two sports. And my mom was always there supporting me. And that is, you know, what led me into college was wrestling. And I decided to wrestle at West Point. And it was because of my dad and my mom that had, like, so much support in me. And they really just inspired me to be, you know, the best version of myself on the mat and off the mat, too, helping my community and all that, you know, helped me get into West Point. It was my earlier years were definitely shaped by, you know, my parents. My brother, he was always pushing me, too. He's 2 years younger than me. And right now he's at Clemson, you know, living his dream down there as well. So. Those, you know, obviously my parents, my grandparents, I have a second set of parents as well. And, they definitely formed me growing up.
Your spiritual journey, Ryan, how did you become a Christian?
So I would say I have an untraditional path of becoming a Christian. I didn't grow up, in a Christian household, so to say, right off the bat. But I was a senior in high school and, I was at a football game, and there's this really cute girl I was talking to. And I was, you know, trying to like go on a date with her or something. And she was like, yeah, you should come to church with my family and I. And I was like, yeah, I'll go to church. That'll be fun. You know, I wasn't a regular church attender. I'd maybe go every now and then. And then when I went to church, I think it was like the fall of 2015. Fall of 2015. I immediately just loved it. Her parents were awesome. It was a really cool experience. And then I remember from then on, I just like started going with their family again, like every Sunday. And that's how I found Jesus. And it was funny. I remember like I just kind of like officially like welcomed, you know, Jesus in my life, accepted faith. And the next, literally like 3 or 4 days after I officially got my appointment to West Point, I thought that was pretty fitting. And you know, things are well. And I still talk to her family, and we're still pretty close. And it's nice to go back home and have some faith too. That's originally how I came to faith, right before I went off to West Point. And I can talk later about my faith at West Point, and that's where it really grew. But yeah.
Well, let's maybe jump into that now. In what ways did your faith influence your experiences at West Point?
So my faith at West Point was everything. I was very lucky that I kind of jumped right into a community where faith was a big part of a lot of people's lives. Some of my best friends are really deep in their faith, and it really helps, you know, when you have a community of people around you that think that way. But West Point was just so hard, and it would bring me down to my knees like every day. So I had to rely on God, and I really was forced to be strong in my faith because I'm like, I can't do this on my own. You know, maybe when I was home in Bemis, things were a lot easier for me, right? You know, and then I set foot on West Point and things just changed. So, you know, faith for me was everything, and that's how I got through the darkest of times. And obviously I had, a lot of great moments at West Point too, and I was always grateful, and I couldn't have done the things I did at West Point on my own, that's for sure. But it was really that community of people that, like, shaped my faith, and I was really grateful for that. You know, Fellowship of the Christian Athletes, FCA, it was a big role in my life too there, and the wrestling team. You know, we'd meet every Wednesday after practice and talk about, you know, the gospel and our faith, and you had to rely on them because you were like really, you know, there were some days there where it was very tough.
We hear that. We hear that from that seems to be a common perception that people would have, of course, going to a military academy, a West Point, Annapolis. There's a toughness to it. Talk more about that. Tough in what way? What brings you to your knees? What causes you in that space to have to rely on God?
Yeah, so I can give you two specific examples. So it was my plebe year. They call that, you know, that's your freshman year. So plebe year, I'm a, like right, you know, right off the bat on the team. And I remember it was my first month, and I was practicing one day, and I remember I was like in on a single leg on a kid, and I was like lifting it up, and my whole knee just caved in, pop. Like I was, it was like really painful moment. And aside from that, like I was out for like 2 to 3 months as a plebe, off the mat, kind of removed from the wrestling team. And like I really had to rely on my faith there because I could have like went off the deep end, and I don't really know what could have happened if I would have, like, you know, I remember at that time I was thinking about like leaving the team, and like, you know, I don't know if I can do this, if this is for me. But I had such an incredible support system on the team, like my coach, you know, Coach Ward is really invested in me, Coach Simpson really invested in me, and I can talk about those two later and how they played a role in my faith. But that was like faith was like, all right, I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna do well. And, you know, I ended up coming back and getting in a lot of matches on the back end of the season. And it just, like, I was faithful through the whole process with my weight cut. You know, that was not easy either. And you know, it was funny because the next year around, the same thing happened again where I wasn't out for 3 months, but I was out for about 6 weeks with the same injury. And it's just like, you know, I already exercised that faith muscle, I'll call it, you know, where I really had to rely on God and the people around me. And I did it again, and I came back on the mat, and then I, you know, started for my first few dual meets, and I won. I remember like at Lehigh and against Bucknell, and I had some of my greatest moments a few like months after I was like at a really big low. So there's one other time though where God, you know, when you talk about tough moments, where I was like brought down to my knees. So my senior year, I was named a captain of the Army wrestling team with three of my best friends. So I was like, you know, I was like riding high. I was like, thank God. I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. I mean, I'm a captain of a Division I team. Things are going really well. And so, you know, I was at like a high, right? So this is when I got brought down to my knees. So October 2020, I got COVID, and I was getting down to weight, right? I was getting down to 125 pounds. You know, my immune system wasn't the best, and COVID just crushed me. I remember, I was down bad. So I come back on the mat after my 2 weeks of quarantine, and I'm just really struggling to, like, I remember, like, breathing and, like, my, like, chest. I had, like, some pains. And turns out, you know, I had this thing called pleurisy, where, like, your heart is kind of, like, inflamed, and it's, like, rubbing up against your, like, chest cavity. And that's why my, like, arm was going numb and everything. And they did all these tests. I remember for a month I couldn't wrestle. All these tests, everything. You know, all these doctors in New York City were, like, involved. And at the end of the day, I remember, like, mid-November, they, like, called my wrestling career off. They said, Ryan, like, it's really not smart for you to move on here. You know, you're going to commission as an officer. And right now you're going to risk, like, some permanent long-term damage with your heart and your lungs, I remember. So I had to, like, take that, and I was like, wow, like, this is how my career is going to end, right? Like, my whole life I was a wrestler, pride myself in my toughness, and I didn't even get a chance to compete my last season, not because of, like, a knee injury or something, it's because of, like, something you can't see inside. So that was hard, and so this is how God played a role in that. So that was done, right? And I was, like, I remember, like, just trying to, you know, rely on my faith and talking to God, and I remember sitting in my room mid-November, and I just wasn't doing anything. I wasn't allowed to go in the wrestling room because of the COVID protocols. So I had nothing going on. I was bored. And I qualified for these scholarships earlier in the year. But when October came around, I said, you know what, I wasn't going to apply because I didn't have a lot of time. Wrestling was taking up all my time, and I really wanted to be an All-American wrestler. And you know, applying for these scholarships is such a lengthy process. But now I wasn't doing anything. So I was like, you know what, let's send it. Let's, like, apply to Harvard. Let's apply to MIT. I had 3 weeks to do it, so you're supposed to do that over, like, 3 months. So it was a sprint. And, not that everything – I don't necessarily believe that everything happens for a reason, but in this particular time, I think there was a reason why God pulled me off the mat, and it was to, you know, apply to these graduate schools. And then next thing you know, in April – well, first, in March, I got waitlisted at Harvard, the data science program. So I was like, oh, I'm definitely not going to get an MIT now because, like, MIT, technically speaking, is a better school. But I got in end of March, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, this is crazy. This is going to change my life. And I look back at that, and that was God directly working in my life, saying, like, this is the path I want you on. And now I'm here at this incredible university, and you're really just, like, trying to change the world. So that is, like, specifically at West Point how God worked in my life.
You're listening to Ryan Hetrick. Ryan is a current graduate student at MIT in the Technology and Public Policy program. It's his story of how God, in the low moments, in the down times, in times of perhaps even brokenness, God reset, rearranged, reprogrammed opportunities for where he is today. You're listening to the Good Life Radio program. When we come back from our break, more from Ryan Hetrick. You can find out more about him at ryanhetrick.com. That's Ryan, H-E-T-R-I-C-K, ryanhetrick.com. Have you ever been in a point where you felt like things have gone different than what you expected? They surprise you, those moments, and they almost bring you to the breaking point. Well, these are opportunities for hope, as Ryan shares. He'll share that and more when we come back. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky.
James 3:13 says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom." The Good Life with Dr. Danny is brought to you by generous sponsors. Thank you to Coach Dino Babers and Mrs. Susan Babers, Mr. Edmund Jung and Mrs. May Jung, Mr. Rodney Arias Sr., A1A Electrician, Cedar Assembly of God, and the Thursday Men's Breakfast, Boston. If you, your business, or your church would like to support The Good Life with Dr. Danny, please visit drdanny.live. Join our partnership team. That's drdanny.live. Thank you.
Hear me call.
You're listening to The Good Life with Dr. Danny, a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries and Formation Institute. Divisions of Jesus Christ is calling you. Now let's join Dr. Danny and experience the good life today.
So Ryan Hattrick works in the artificial intelligence policy space. He's researching how the United States can continue to innovate and lead in the field of AI while doing it in an ethical way. You can find out more about him at ryanhattrick.com. If you're tuning in right now, or maybe caught the tail end of the last segment, hey, you can get this program in its entirety. Just go to The Good Life with Dr. Danny or drdanny.live, get the podcast, and share it with a family member or friend. Ryan, going back to your vision, during this time where God began to open the door for you at MIT, what did God say to you through the opportunity and opportunities that emerged coming from that difficult time there at West Point to the windows that were opening for you here?
So I think at West Point, you know, God put me through some trials, and academically too, I really had to work hard. And it was funny, at first West Point told me I wasn't smart enough to get in. I had to go to the preparatory school. You know, they essentially told me to kind of like kick rocks and you know, you got to do another year and then you'll be good enough to come in. So now I'm in a situation like where I was going to go to MIT. And I think like God wanted to use me as an example of someone who maybe wasn't the smartest in high school, who maybe didn't have like a talent, like my SAT and ACT scores were not good. My standardized test scores were terrible, really, to like show people that you can really like go to some of these top universities like MIT or Harvard or Stanford, as long as you're like willing to like put in the work and maybe in your undergrad and like do something outside of just school. So I think he was trying to like use me as an example to inspire others. You know, we talk about the vision that God has for me, and I think that vision is to inspire others by being the best version of myself and, you know, lead others to like really achieve what they're capable of, and not always focusing necessarily on your talents, but on your work ethic and your drive and your consistency, and not only your work, but your faith. Those are like the most rewarding things. You see some of the most talented people in the world, and they just can't like, you know, sustain their success because they don't have the work ethic, the consistency, faith in God, whatever. But I think God really wanted to, you know, you talk about opening up that door. Obviously, like, it was a great personal thing for me, but I think he was like trying to use me more as an example of someone that can be, you know, not having to have so much talent in the classroom, so to say, and, you know, open doors here. And obviously, now that I'm here, I see a lot of the opportunities that I have and how I can really change a world. And, you know, that's my goal. Like, I don't really think small. Like, God didn't put me on this world to think small. He told me, you know, you're here to really change a world and inspire others to be the best version of themselves. And that's, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do here at MIT.
Why focus on artificial intelligence policy?
Because I think there's a big gap in the computer scientists, like the guys who are working in the code of AI, and then the policymakers. There's like a big disconnect, right? The policymakers are, you know, 65, 70 years old and maybe didn't have a technical degree, and they're writing these policies on, you know, AI. At least when I was going in last year, and it's crazy how things have even changed my first year here, they just passed this thing called the CHIPS Act in Congress a few you know, months ago, that kind of addressed some of the things in AI, and the frameworks in there were pretty cool, because one of my advisors that I help, Simon Johnson, was like kind of the mastermind behind some of the ideas that were in that bill. So it's pretty cool. But I really think that there needs to be more technical people writing policies, and I find it so interesting. And that was kind of why I chose that space.
What type of AI policy, Ryan, will allow the U.S. to continue leading in the AI space in a more ethical manner?
So right now, I would say, you know, if you have three sectors, right, you have the public sector, you know, I'm talking about things like the Lincoln Laboratory, DARPA, you have the private sector, obviously all the big companies, Google, you know, OpenAI, and then you have academia. So let's like look at a triangle, right? So you have those three sectors, and they weren't like, I just feel that they weren't working enough together to like innovate the best that we can. So I feel like, you know, something like the CHIPS Act with some more like federal funding to give a boost in the AI, like, you know, innovation. And I talk about regulation too. So regulation of AI is a tricky thing because it's moving so fast. And by the time you write significant policies, I don't really think they address the right, things in the AI space. So I think currently in our state of AI that the U.S. should take more of a hands-off approach in their AI regulations, let it grow, and have more of an oversight committee that, you know, looks at the ethics of it. And there are a lot of ethical issues with AI that need to be addressed. And I think that if you have some oversight in the U.S. government to look at things like explainability, like why does an AI like system make a decision? So I'll give you an example. Let's say you're someone and you're applying for a loan, right? Usually right now, the people, people aren't making that decision. It's AI systems. They're looking at your income. They're looking at things that, you know, your race, your gender, your wherever, your zip code, and is making a decision based off of prior data. And if you have a system that can't explain why you didn't get a loan, there's an ethical concern there, right? So that's like something that I look at and how we can fix that. So it's a trade-off between innovation and consumer protection. Those are one of the biggest trade-offs in AI policy, because the more you innovate, the less the consumers will be protected. But the more you protect the consumers, it's not like what Europe is doing right now, the less innovation you see. Europe is seeing, you know, a kind of a stagnation in their innovation because they are really focusing on the consumer protection side of things. So that's where I'm at right now.
Speak a little bit about, and you wrote about this too, the comparison between the European Union,
mm-hmm.
China,
yeah.
and the U.S. from an ethical standpoint.
Yeah. I think there's just a lot of difference in cultures, and that they kind of drive the policies. A lot of people look at, you know, China and don't think their, you know, AI is ethical. I think they're trying to improve it, but at the end of the day, I don't want to call it like an AI arms race for the U.S. and China, because that's not what it is. But there's clear competition, right? Like China has a plan to be like the AI world superpower by 2030, right? So they're obviously investing a lot into artificial intelligence. And right now, if you look at like, there's like these things called the Tortoise AI rankings. You know, the United States still has the most capabilities in the field of artificial intelligence. China's arguably closing that gap. I think with recent developments of like things like the CHIPS Act, more federal funding, more of a like unity in AI leadership, right? So that's the public sector, private sector, and academia working together to make AI like the most AI innovation that we can see while doing it ethically. I feel like in the past they weren't necessarily like on the same page with things. You know, you look at some of the top executive leaders in this country, like Bezos, Elon Musk, Zuckerberg. Those guys are CEOs of the biggest companies in the world, and a lot of the AI innovation is happening within those companies, right? Like Meta. So they have been testifying in front of Congress a lot recently. There's like a clear disconnect, I think, with, you know, our leaders in fields of AI and, you know, Congress. And I hope to see in the future that there's like more of a united front on that. And there will be. And you already see it. You already see, like this legislation passed, and there's more of a unitized like effort towards making the best AI possible and making it the most ethical it can be for our citizens.
You're a spokesperson. You've got a level of clarity, you've got a gift of articulation, you've got vision. You also have a leadership quality. Not everyone becomes a captain of the West Point wrestling team, but here you are. Ryan Hattrick, as you think about leadership, you've even developed a podcast called The Audacious Journey.
Yeah.
Why did you choose to call it by that name?
Because I think in order to be successful, you have to have like audacity. You know, maybe you have to do things that aren't in the status quo. You have to put yourself out there. So that's kind of, you know, the reason behind that. And the people I've had on that podcast so far, like I've seen traits of them like really putting themselves out there. I'm talking like someone like Chandler Smith. He's one of the best CrossFit athletes in the world right now. He's a West Point grad, and his like transition from the Army, what happened to him in the Army, and now he's a CrossFitter. So I really look at like having some audacity in your journey, because you have to take risks. I don't believe that like if you want to be successful someday and really stand out, you have to take risks. You have to have some kind of audacity to your journey, you know?
Now let's trace that back. How would you, Ryan Hattrick, how would you tether your view on audacity in life with your faith?
How would I tether it? Can you go into that a little more? Like,
What's the connection with that boldness to your faith?
So I like to think about this thing that I call the faith muscle, right? The more you stretch yourself in your faith, I think the stronger you get. So you have to have some audacity to put yourself out there, take risks. You know, God, if God's calling something in your life and you got to go chase it, you can't be sitting back and waiting to see what happens. You have to have that audacity to go out there and try and achieve, you know, the things that you set out to do. And that inherently is going to stretch your faith muscle. So that's the connection between audacity and faith, is that you have to, you know, stretch that faith muscle to be audacious and achieve your goals. That's kind of my connection there. And I think there's a strong connection between audacity and faith.
When we come back, we're going to hear more from Ryan. He graduated from West Point in May of 2021. He's currently a second lieutenant in the Army in the cyber branch. When we come back from our break, you'll hear more from him. RyanHattrick.com. You can get more information from him there. Find out more about his podcast. At West Point, Ryan wrestled all 4 years. He was a captain of the wrestling team his senior year. Today, he hosts a podcast called The Audacious Journey. Well, there is a certain level of boldness that you feel in this man. He is up and about doing things for God, doing things for society. More from Ryan Hattrick when we come back. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky.
On behalf of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening to The Good Life with Dr. Danny, weekdays at 6 p.m. on WEZE, and visiting drdanny.live for more resources. My dear friend, it is because of listeners and donors like you that we are able to spread the message of Jesus' love and bring hope to people like you, your family, and friends. Proverbs 11:25 says, "He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed." Will you prayerfully consider donating to Danny Yamashiro Ministries so that we may continue to broadcast the gospel, so believers will be built up and non-believers may form a relationship with Jesus Christ? Visit drdanny.live to make a financial contribution today. That's drdanny.live. And thank you again for supporting The Good Life with Dr. Danny. May God richly bless you with The Good Life.
Listening to The Good Life with Dr. Danny, a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries and Formation Institute. Divisions of Jesus Christ is calling you. Now let's join Dr. Danny and experience the good life today.
If you ever fell into the trap of feeling mundane and mediocre and thinking that things are just good the way they are, well, once in a while, the Lord will bring us into a place where we get to meet someone like Ryan Hattrick, who is lighting the fire under everyone he meets, but there also is a fire that's growing in him. So it's not like he's doing it for others and saying, hey, do what I say, but not as I do. It's the opposite. It's do as I do. And that's the kind of leadership that many long to follow. I think about the Apostle Paul, as he said, follow me as I follow Christ. And Christ really is the center of our lives, as the Lord has become the Lord of Ryan Hattrick's life. RyanHattrick.com. That's Ryan, HETRICK.com. Here is the Good Life Radio program. Thanks for being with us today. I'm grateful that you're spending this time with us. Ryan Hattrick also hosts a podcast called The Audacious Journey and is innovating through a startup company called Merckxin. We'll talk about that. Ryan, explain the innovation being offered through your startup, Merckxin.
So the innovation is really in the idea. So I am right now in the college athletic space with my startup. So just so I can get all the listeners up to speed, on July 1st, 2021, the NCAA allowed student athletes to get paid through their name, image, and likeness, or their NIL. So right now we're operating in the NIL space. And it made sense because I'm a former college athlete, and the founders of this company that I did this with at West Point are also former college athletes. So the innovation of this is in the idea. And what we're doing is we're helping current Division I athletes who have had success on the Division I level, mentor high school athletes who are aspiring to be college athletes. No one's really doing this model, and there's a lot of people, you know, who are worried about sponsorships, and there's a lot of value to all that in those deals. But what we're doing is helping college athletes directly inspire the next generation of college athletes, and they can also monetize from it as well. So a lot of college athletes do actually struggle financially. You know, you hear these deals of guys like Bryce Young and the very like Livy Dunn and the very top level college of like NIL deals. But what happens a lot of times in the mid tier is that they don't get any money for these deals. But they're terrific athletes; they're the best athletes in the country. But they struggle to like monetize. So we took a model where they're like, these guys are great athletes and they can inspire hundreds and thousands of future athletes. By mentoring them, and in return, they get money as well. So we created a model where these athletes are making, aiming 10-20K a month by mentoring these high school athletes. So they're having a great impact on communities, on high school and middle school athletes, and the parents love it too, because now their son or daughter has access to, like, you know, for example, we work with one of the top soccer players in the country. His name's Isaiah Reed. He's a striker at Clemson. He scored both goals in NCAA finals last year and led Clemson to their first national championship since 1984. He's an absolute star. So we are helping him mentor high school, middle school athletes who are aspiring to be on the Division I level. So it's just a really cool experience that we have here, and we're ready to really grow and like change the world with our company, and we're about ready to expand here. I can talk about that a little bit more later, but yeah, it's a really rewarding experience for us.
Say a little bit more about monetizing. You mentioned $15,000-$20,000 per month. How does that for a collegiate athlete relate to the athlete's mentorship of high schoolers?
Yeah. So that's the goal right now, to get them at, and they're on their way there for sure right now. So the way it works is, so let's look at Isaiah in particular, because he's like our poster boy. He kind of solidified this for us. So, you know, when I go to people at Harvard, MIT, wherever around the country, I kind of like refer to Isaiah because he was the one who like solidified, and we call it proof of concept, right? So the way it works is he has two types of mentorships. And by the way, these mentorships are all virtual. They're all on Zoom. Okay, there's no in-person here, so our athlete doesn't have to take a ton of time to travel around the country. So he has two types of mentorships: group mentorships and one-on-one mentorships. So these group mentorships are where high school athletes, middle school athletes, you know, will pay anywhere from like $300 to $600 for a session, and they hop on a call with Isaiah and like four other athletes who are high schoolers, and Isaiah goes over, you know, confidence building. He goes over lifting. He'll talk about recruiting sometimes as well. So that's one. And then the other one is a one-on-one mentorship where he specifically invests like in you and like develops your confidence, your recruiting, your on-field play, their skills. Like he kind of caters it towards their weaknesses. And those are like a little bit pricier. But yeah, that's how they're consistently monetizing every month.
And you're already beginning to see results.
Yeah, we're seeing results. So we have five athletes right now. So Isaiah is the first one, Clemson soccer player. We have Deshaun Morrell. He is a UCLA running back, and he's sitting behind arguably the best running back in the country right now, and this guy named Charbonnet. He's going to go to the league next year, so he's learning a lot from Charbonnet, and he's going to hopefully be the guy next year. We have Chase Davis, an Alabama defensive back. His story is pretty cool because he was overlooked in high school, and now he's at the best college in the country. We have Sophie Halsey. She's a former Michigan swimmer, former All-American Big Ten swimmer, and she's helping, you know, she's going to help the next generation of women swimmers, so that's really cool. And then we also have this guy named Giovanni Ruiz. He's a football player at the University of Buffalo, a personal friend of mine, actually. We wrestled each other back in the day. He was technically our first client, so we really like helping him out as well.
So you're focusing on these five clients.
Yep.
At what point do you plan on scaling this model?
Today. We did a ton of outreach today. I put myself out on social media, our company, and, you know, the goal is to have 50 athletes by January 1st. And we're really trying to get on some big time athletes too, and help them inspire the next generation of athletes. And that onboarding process is going right now. We're starting to, you know, partner with different camps around the country so that way we can fill the mentorships easier with, you know, we call them non-organic traffic. So all that means is, you know, instead of our athletes going out and grabbing their followers on social media to do mentorships, we're supplying them with guys who want to get better. So that's really cool. You know, and we're just creating a model now where I'm, you know, I'm talking to like guys for sponsorships. We're looking at things, you know, like Jersey Mike's, things like that, for example, who might be interested in sponsoring our athletes. And moving forward, we just want to create a model where it's a really like prestigious and attractive thing to be a Merckxson athlete, where you're inspiring the next generation of Division I athletes at the same time monetizing from it and getting sponsorships.
Take us behind the scenes. People like to get a glimpse behind the curtain, Ryan Hattrick. What went on behind the scenes from the founding of the company, the early conversations with friends at West Point, and who emerged to partner with you when you came here to Cambridge, people from MIT and Harvard?
So, yeah, I'll tell you what happened behind the scenes at first is we failed a lot. We failed in two industries. We were trying originally to help paint contractors generate leads, failed. We tried to help e-commerce businesses grow on social media, failed. So this was like our third go at a new industry, and we obviously found a great niche here, and it just happened, you know, we were both college athletes, our founders, and it just happened to work. You know, specifically here at MIT, I've had people reach out to me and connect. It's incredible now that once I put myself out there, I mean, we talk about being like audacious and flexing your faith muscle. I really put myself out there on social media, telling everyone what we did. This past summer, I really, you know, didn't go out much. I didn't travel. I just was grinding on this. We really wanted to get this model down with our five athletes. And although we didn't help get our athletes exactly where we wanted them to be, they're in the process of getting there, and we feel that the model is great, and people are super interested. I've had, you know, I posted on my LinkedIn, you know, Tuesday, and I had over 30 DMs literally within 3 or 4 days on LinkedIn. It was crazy, and I had people from all over the country reaching out, and I'm just starting to realize how powerful, you know, the three networks are. Like West Point's network is super powerful in the United States. MIT's is obviously really good, and Harvard's as well. I'm not even, you know, technically a Harvard student, but I'm really looking to work in the athletic arena there, bringing on some wrestlers here soon, maybe some volleyball players, and we're going to move our way into football players. So Harvard will probably be a good, you know, we're going to call them hub, like a hub for us. We're going to hopefully have a few hub schools, and all that really means is like we kind of have our foot in the door there, and we can like bring on athletes from a bunch of different teams. So we're looking at places like Clemson and Harvard and things like that.
You're a competitor. Your instincts are to win. Your instincts are to take the hard knocks and work through them. When others give up, when others sort of fade away, you're still there. You're still pushing forward. How do you perceive competition?
I love competition. I think competition is, you know, in essence, great for everybody, because when you compete, you bring out the best version of yourself. You learn things about yourself. And even if you fail, even if you lose, you learn something about yourself. And obviously, if you win and you take away, you know, the glory, like there's a ton of value in that as well. So I love competition. I'm always seeking for it. I'm always racing, you know, trying marathons and 10Ks, whatever, because I find so much value in like putting everything you have out on the line and seeing what happens and seeing what you have versus like I have. I think it's awesome.
I think it encourages people too, Ryan, to put themselves out there, to put yourself out there. Others can live vicariously through courageous, audacious people, but there's also a fragment at least that grabs onto our hearts, that perks us up a bit, enables us to move, step forward, and maybe even go beyond what we ever thought we were capable of by the grace and strength of God. When we come back in our final segment, I do want to circle back. You mentioned a couple coaches that helped you along at a critical time when you were at West Point. And when we come back from our break, as we start, you do have a soft spot in your heart for high schoolers. There's a scholarship program that you have, a Ryan Hattrick scholarship for STEM degrees in college. Let's talk a little bit about that. But again, going back to the tough spot to bring people out of that to a place of audacious faith. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. A police officer found a girl crying on the sidewalk one day. "What's wrong?" he asked. "I'm lost," she said. "Do you have your parents' phone number?" he asked. "No," she said. "What about your address?" "No." She began to sob. Suddenly, she stopped, and her eyes brightened. "What happened?" the officer asked. "I remember," she said. "There's a church near my house, and at the top of the church, there's a cross. Take me to the cross. Take me to the cross, because when I see the cross, I'll be able to find my way home." My friend, if you feel like you've lost your way, turn to the cross of Jesus Christ, who died for your sins, was buried, and rose again. Will you turn to Jesus? Open your heart to Him and find your way home to God.
Jeremiah 33:3 says, "Call to me, and I will answer you and show you great and unsearchable things you do not know." The Good Life with Dr. Danny is a program that was born out of prayer. The Spirit of Christ guides us through prayer, empowers us through prayer, and provides for us through prayer. There are mighty things that the Lord is doing in the Northeast, across the United States, and around the world. Would you like to be a part of God's work through The Good Life with Dr. Danny? Visit drdanny.live. Dr. Danny invites you to join his prayer team. Each month, you will receive a letter updating you on some of the behind-the-scenes developments, prayer requests, along with a devotional that Dr. Danny writes to encourage you in the Lord Jesus Christ. Join the prayer team today and make an eternal difference in people's lives. Visit drdanny.live. That's drdanny.live.
You're listening to The Good Life with Dr. Danny, a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries and Formation Institute. Divisions of Jesus Christ is calling you. Now let's join Dr. Danny and experience the good life
today. So his name is Ryan Hatrick. Remember that name. You're going to want to know that name. Also, he also has a startup company called Merksin. He was describing that before our break. Merksin is revolutionizing how college athletes are getting paid and inspiring the next generation of college athletes. Ryan also started a scholarship program in his home area for high school athletes who are pursuing a STEM degree in college. You're listening to The Good Life program. Thanks for being with us. You can find out more at drdanny.live and more about Ryan Hatrick at ryanhatrick.com. Ryan, talk to us about the scholarship. How did that grow in your heart to make that a reality?
Yeah, so I really just wanted to, you know, give back to my community. My community, you know, back in here at Bemis Point has done a lot for me. And my dad's a teacher there, and I feel like I'm in a position now where I can hopefully have some impact on people and influence. And even though, you know, I am young, I'm only, you know, 6 years removed from graduating high school, I said I can still have an impact here, even if it's not a ton of money, like a ton of prestige on it. Like, let's start something now and have it grow. So the idea behind the scholarship was to reward, you know, high school student athletes who are pursuing a STEM degree. I think that there's, like, coming out of high school, not many people want to go into STEM. They don't like math, whatever. I think there's a lot of value in math, so I'm kind of trying to, like, incentivize my hometown area to pursue STEM degrees. But I also think there's a lot of value in being an athlete too, and athletes bring a lot to the table, and I really think athletes can bring a lot to the table in the STEM world as well because of their discipline, their commitment towards their craft. So that's kind of how it started, and I just talked. So I went to two high schools when I was growing up. One was Southwestern High School, which is just, you know, in Lakewood, New York, and then when I was a junior, I moved across the lake and went to Bemis Point, Maple Grove High School. So I wanted to start the scholarships at those two schools, and yeah, we started it, and it was great because I was home, you know, during the scholarship presentation. So I went and gave a little talk at both the schools, and it was really cool, you know. Both the winners are very, like, deserving, and I see a lot of potential in him. One of them, his name's Dante Hughes. He's going to go wrestle at Lehigh, actually, and he's going to pursue an engineering degree there. So, like, that's exactly, you know, that's really cool. Although Lehigh, I don't know. I used to wrestle them a lot, but they're, no, their wrestling program's top notch, and really proud of him. And then the second kid is going to Chicago to do computer science. So Sam, he's a really good kid, and yeah, so it was really rewarding to go back, and I'm going to continue to do it, and hopefully try to get it to grow.
You can see these athletes, these scholar athletes, at ryanhattrick.com. So take us now to your coaches. You talked about how formative the time was. You talk about the craft of wrestling, the craft of athletics, and how that relates to, say, a STEM field. What did your coaches do for you, and what happened in you when you were at West Point wrestling?
So I had two coaches. One of them was Coach Simpson. He was my coach at the preparatory school. So as I mentioned before, West Point said I didn't have good enough grades to go straight into West Point. So I went to the preparatory school, and he was my coach there. He was a former Army wrestler, class of 09, and he really brought me to my faith, because that was my first year away from high school. I was like in shock. My eyes were like wide open, like deer in headlights, like, oh my gosh, this is West Point. And he really helped me, like, calm me down, and really helped me, like, in my faith. And he's a very faith-driven man, which it was really cool. And I just, you know, worked my tail off there, and he really loved that, and he was really invested in me. But he was invested in all of us preps, you know, they call us prep stars, prep schoolers. There's eight of us, and he stayed at West Point his whole, like, you know, our 4 years, and he watched us graduate. And it was one of the most rewarding things, as he, like, molded us into, you know, the men we are today. And although we're all in different parts of the country and even the world now, all in different branches within the Army, doing completely different things, like, you know, we can always, like, come back to, like, Coach Simpson, and he was, like, the one who molded us into leaders. So that was – he was really cool. And then my head coach at West Point, Coach Ward, he's awesome. He is the reason I really got into West Point, right? He brought me to West Point. I remember I was 17 years old, and I went to a West Point wrestling camp. And I went to this camp seeing, like, let's see if West Point's for me. And he was awesome there. And he kind of convinced me to go to West Point instead of going to run in college, because I was going to run in college. And he kind of convinced me to, like, hey, like, dude, West Point is, you know, you're not going to get anything else like it. So he brought me to West Point. And the coolest thing is he made such an impact in my career while I was at West Point. I actually went back to that same camp this past June, and I helped as a camp counselor. You know, I talked about, like, giving back. Like, God put my life that he wanted me to give back to my communities. And, you know, sometime in the month of June was, like, my month of giving back. So that month I gave the scholarships, and I went back and, you know, devoted my time to that camp. So it was so cool being there instead of a 17-year-old, you know, thinking about going to West Point on the other side of things, being 24 and, you know, having West Point in my past. So it was pretty cool.
What did you feel?
At West Point, like at the camp?
When you went back.
Oh, I loved it. I love that place. You know, every time I set foot on that place, it's like a love-hate relationship sometimes, because I remember, like, going back into the gates there when I was a cadet, and I was like, oh, this week is going to be terrible. And so every single time I go back into those gates, I get a little, like, anxiety. But I just feel so at home inside that wrestling room, and just kind of showing the kids, like, showing them technique, and they're all, like, so interested about West Point and, you know, the career options you have and what it's like to be an Army wrestler. So that was so cool.
Your father motivated you.
I remember, like, when we were, you know, first, second grade, like, we'd watch Rocky all the time. That was our thing. We'd watch Rocky. And we'd always, like, listen to the Rocky music, and I'd be working out. Like, when I was in third grade, you know, I didn't have the typical sleepovers of my friends, like, and watch, you know, movies and play video games. We'd be over listening to Rocky and working out, and my dad would be out there, like, cheering us on. And, you know, he inspired me to, like, you know, do what I'm doing now, for sure. Because so a little bit about him, he came from not a lot, like, really not a lot. And he got a full ride to Notre Dame to wrestle, full ride. And so he wrestled there. But he dropped out after his sophomore year. He dropped out. He's like, that's the biggest mistake I ever made in my whole life. He's like, if you can get to a place like the equivalent of, like, a Notre Dame, and he's like, I really want to do everything in my power to get you there, like, you're going to stay. and you're going to succeed, and you're going to, like, you know, live the dreams that, like, I, you know, I messed up because I was distracted and I wasn't focused and I was too worried about partying. He's like, I don't want you to fall into that trap, you know? So it was really cool for him to, like, mentor me through all this. And now I'm at a point where, like, I think it worked.
So there you are now at MIT, having graduated from West Point, second lieutenant, your brother's at Clemson. Your father must be so proud of you, Ryan. As we close today, I'm wondering if you would say a prayer for someone who's listening, someone who's inspired, challenged by what you said. But maybe this person may not have had an encouraging father, may not even have had a father. This person might not be your age or younger, might be even older than you are. A word of encouragement to that person, maybe one who longed to be an athlete, maybe someone with dreams that didn't materialize and fell a bit short, maybe fell a lot short. Encourage that one, that dear friend that's listening, and say a prayer.
Of course, yeah. Dear Lord, I just want to, you know, first thank Danny for bringing me on this podcast, and for anyone that's listening here, anyone that, you know, feels lost, to really just follow God. And I'm gonna call this exercising your faith muscles. So, you know, I just want to put a prayer over anyone here who has a dream to change the world, the dream to achieve their goals, chase their goals, but maybe are just lacking the faith to really put themselves out there and be audacious in their acts, and you know, really exercise that faith muscle. And just, you have to believe in God, and you have to believe in yourself and the people around you that you can do it, and that you can really achieve your dreams. And I live that every day, because I haven't achieved a lot of my dreams still, and I'm exercising my faith muscles. So that's my encouragement to you. In the name of Jesus Christ, pray. Amen.
Amen. Ryan, finally, when you host the Audacious, your audacious.
There's a lot of work I need to do there. The audio.
Well, when you host it, what do you feel when you have your guests on? And I've watched it. I've seen you. You seem to really enjoy it. But what goes on inside?
Yeah. Well, first, I wish I could do them in person. I really do. That would be my dream someday, is to have a podcast like Lex Friedman has an awesome podcast at MIT. Like Joe Rogan obviously has, like, you know, he's the most popular podcast out there. I'd love to, like, bring these athletes in person. But it's crazy because I brought on a lot of our current athletes, almost all of them actually on my podcast.
Good platform.
Yeah, and it's so cool talking to them. And I just, one thing I love is I love this, like, success. Like, people who have, like, went out on a limb and done something really cool, I just want to know their journey. Like, what was it like for you? You know, what did you do? What were the setbacks you had? And a lot of them, like, talked about that in their in their journey. So that's the really cool part, and what they want to do, you know, moving forward, because all those guys I've had on the podcast, including myself, have not achieved all their goals. They have a long way to go to doing what they want to do. So that's also cool to see how they're planning on tackling that.
Well, and you're facilitating the progress and helping them, and as they help you and you work together on building each other up. So, Ryan Hattrick, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Danny. I really appreciate it.
Leadership words from Ryan Hattrick, ryanhattrick.com. That's HTRICK. My friend, God's timing is perfect, and there's no better time than right now to share the love of Christ with someone near you. And if you haven't done so, look, I believe this is the perfect moment for you to open your heart to Jesus. Would you do that? Go to drdanny.live. I've got some resources for you there. If you'd like to join our prayer team or partner with us financially, again, drdanny.live, and I thank you in advance. Proverbs 22:29. Do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. It's always a blessing to be with you. Thank you to Ryan Hattrick, ryanhattrick.com. Until next time, along with my producer, David Nasora, creative director, Brian Torres, web designer, Shana Kusumoto, and guest coordinator, Jan Yee, I'm Danny Yamashiro. Remember, the Lord is with you as you share the love of Jesus with someone today.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of The Good Life with Dr. Danny. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you and that you may find hope in hearing how God's Word affects people from all walks of life. The Good Life with Dr. Danny is a listener-supported program, and we'd like for you to prayerfully consider becoming a sponsor or donor. To contact Dr. Danny and learn more about the ministry, visit drdanny.live. That's drdanny.live. Be sure to tune in weekdays at 6 p.m. to hear The Good Life with Dr. Danny. Until next time, may God richly bless you with The Good Life.